All right, my name is James McCarthy, and I am here at Gamma Delta Chi in Hanover, New Hampshire, and I am doing a Zoom interview with Mr. Stu Sims, who is in Baltimore. Today is Monday, October 31st, 2022, and this is an interview for the Dartmouth Black Lives Oral History Project. Mr. Sims, thank you so much for joining me today. First, I'd like to learn a little about your childhood. Sorry to interrupt you there. Can you please state when and where you were born?
Born in Baltimore, Maryland, July 17, 1950.
Awesome. And can you tell me the names of your parents? Excuse me.
Son of Clarence Louise Sims. I have one brother who's 7 years younger. Grew up in West Baltimore. Aside from a bout of rheumatic fever, had a good childhood.
Okay, West Baltimore with your one brother, and what was that like? Did you live in a neighborhood with a lot of kids? Were you guys outside playing a lot? I know you became quite the athlete, and we'll get to that later on, but was that something sort of you would do to spend time in your childhood?
I grew up in it wasn't economically depressed, but I guess you would call it the urban Baltimore, the 1950s and 60s, early 60s. We were fortunate in the mid 60s, about 64. We relocated to residents close to in Northeast Baltimore, which was close to Morgan State University. And it was a great neighborhood. I met a lot of people who university, and they were very helpful to me from an academic standpoint.
Go ahead. So they were helpful to you just being around that community, that sort of the environment of the university helped you grow academically?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's correct.
Gotcha. And then, so when came time to go to high school, I understand that you went to the Gilman School right there in Baltimore.
I did. I started out being interested in another prep school, but settled on Gilman, and I was fortunate enough.
I'm sorry, Mr. Sims, I lost you for just a second. You were fortunate enough to do what? Graduated in 1968 from the Gilman School, and I understand, please correct me if I'm wrong, that was part of the first graduating class that had black students?
That is correct. There were, I had three black classmates.
Okay, three black classmates, so four of you. And what was that like? I know it's hard to sort of dive into, and this was some years ago, but did you face a lot of challenges at that point in being
black? We celebrated, I guess, several years ago, the 50th anniversary of the graduation. And at that time, I recounted that certainly to be welcome. It was very difficult given the what I would call sort of an economic isolation, as well as sort of a learning the whole environment of independent schools that's associated with independent schools, and the whole aspect of turning in a math class. Is certainly a reality. So
that's certainly served.
So perspective and kept moving forward, and there were certain teachers who thought perhaps that your only purpose there was sort of a symbolic purpose as opposed wanting an education. But these were interesting and challenging times. I entered in 65. The time I was there, so about what was happening in the country from 1964 through 1968.
Right, and that does time up sort of with some of the historic events and into your college years, which we'll get into in a second. And just going back to your time at Gilman, when you say that teachers felt like you were there to fill a need or serve a cause, how would you yourself and your other classmates who were Black try to dispel that or disprove that? And sort of, did you feel a need to prove your worth or your deservingness of being at that school?
Well, based upon... pathway certainly was so the important is and to try to take care of business as was necessary. So I don't know that there was a symbolic gesture that I gave to the instructors or classmates. I think it was just a situation in which you had to be determined to take care of business. Everything from Jackie Robinson and Joe Louis to Muhammad Ali. So,
right, and as you touched on briefly, those were sort of some of the events that shaped your time, both at Gilman and I would assume at Dartmouth, which we will get to in 1 second. But during, as you said, you entered in 65 and graduated in 68. So this was a period of turmoil and unrest, particularly as we moved towards the quote-unquote end of the Civil Rights Movement and Martin Luther King's assassination in 1968. And just, can you touch on maybe some of the major world events outside of school that you felt impacted you and your time there?
Well, I think one of the major things certainly... The introduction to a much broader sort of vista of education. I had much outside of the East Coast. I think the fact that we were participating in foreign language classes, the fact that we were discussing a number of things in both recent history as well as current history events simultaneously, by the way, still continuing, and it never stops.
I air quote it. Yes, please go ahead.
So it was important. I wrote a senior speech and delivered a research paper on South Africa, which at that time was heavily segregated and paralleled what was happening. The title, Whites Only. So I brought with me, I think, a sense of purpose that we could all have a better community. And certainly, everything. A very, very terms of what America has and our community has yet to accomplish, as well as attempting to make it a better community in Baltimore and Greater Maryland.
That's great to hear. It's really refreshing. I guess you could say that the Gilman School was ahead of its time in that sense and really kind of preparing you guys for what would come, as well as looking back on this, but focusing on the modern day and then sort of the events that we witness as we go through as students. And just... Absolutely. And just to transition a little bit now, as you had gone through Gilman and sort of learned to understand, what would it take to succeed there academically, as well as I'm going to assume athletically, I'm sure you've had quite a bit of college suitors and you eventually ended upon Dartmouth. Can you talk about a little bit why you decided to come up this way?
I visited a number of schools, some in the Ivy League,
a few in the South, and I got some letters.
From, I am. I can hear you.
Larger schools. Lost the connection. Are you still there?
Go ahead.
Had athletes.
Quite frankly, and so
I didn't.
I looked at the usual, which turned out to be Brown, Yale, and Dartmouth, and I was impressed by
The collection of individuals that Dartmouth had, and the fact that it was a totally distinct environment from the, it was not clubby, as clubby as the other environments. And it just offered for, seems like for all students, just a much different independent option.
Absolutely. And that, like you said, could create an opportunity for you to develop here and grow into a few things. And let's just stick on football for a second, if you don't mind, because it's something I certainly don't mind talking about. I understand you were part of two Ivy League championships here.
Three.
I apologize for that.
Three championships. Could not play varsity at that time. We were, 25-2.
So quite an era of success.
Yeah.
At that time, which is awesome for the legendary Coach Black and towards the end of his run. And now, can I ask you, coming in, was it difficult to get adjusted? You mentioned the freshman could not play varsity at this time, but was it hard coming into this new place, this new world?
Well, I think you know, I came in with eyes open, understanding was, you know, the Coach Blackman had said, you know, freshmen don't they don't serve as cannon fodder. However, That rule was voided on the second day of practice. and so the reality of what he said, I'd be the number one tailback. And, you know, I walked in and there were, you know, 16 tailbacks in the freshman class, you know, including one. So there was competition. I mean, there was a tremendous amount. It was a slow, hard grind.
Right, a slow, hard grind, and like you mentioned earlier, talking about the Gilman School, you knew though it was time to just get things done and get your work done, and you were able to achieve quite a career. Obviously, playing on such successful teams in this time period. And what were relationships like with your teammates? You mentioned that I'd assume not everybody stuck through and still there as a senior, but I would have to imagine that you formed quite some bonds with your teammates during this time period.
Yeah, because of that degree of success, in fact, there was a reunion on campus last year, teams that you know, we gathered, and as a 1971 team, I felt we were somewhat in the sense of being present for that gathering. So I attended a game with Yale and joined in the dinner, you know, afterwards to seeing my teammates Captain Wayne Young, who still has connection to the school, and enjoyed it, enjoyed the visit, and enjoyed talking to some of the students, and enjoyed meeting as well. It's my last opportunity also to see Jim, who recently left us. It was pleasant. It was good. I would have hoped that a lot of people in my class, would have been able to stay on the team through those years. But we lost a couple of people in the sense of other people having other interests other than football and athletics. But all in all, it was a wise investment of time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I certainly could say the same about my experience. And now this was a time, like you said, you came in from Gilman School where there were so few Black students in the school period, never mind on the team. Were there a lot of African-American guys on the team at that time? And did things always mesh well with the white players? Can you talk about that experience a little bit?
Is connection still there?
Yes, it is. I'm sure I can go.
Yeah, I focused much on offense. I didn't have much to do with defense. The team got along generally well. I think we began to run into problems because I think coaches were sort of somewhat late in adopting to new trends such as long hair, afros, mustaches. I mean, we spent a lot of time on useless crap from my standpoint, which just began to focus on. I think also some of the coaches, I don't want to say it was really understood or appreciated certain things that they did. Almost fell apart in 1971 because we had at one point when you looked, we looked like Alabama. In other words, nine of the folks were African American. And, I don't know what ripples it is, but, for a couple of reasons, the coach did some things in terms of, personnel folks that actually, belittled a quality player and almost caused a riot. It took Wayne Young and myself, two meetings, one with the coach and one with the African-American players, to heal the wounds. So that was a lot of time that was wasted and spent because, I think the coach didn't think about the repercussions of what he was doing. But nothing major, no walkouts. There were other teams that were going through that period, had much more difficult conditions, particularly in the Middle Atlantic and the South. So. And there were a few of the Northeast. I mean, I talked to some of the folks at Cornell. I talked to some folks at Columbia. I mean, they had some of the same bumps that Dartmouth had.
Yeah, and it makes sense that there would sort of be this natural tension or issues, this ripple effect that you mentioned. And from what I've understand, what you mentioned, I know in 1971 you guys did go on to win all but one game and win the Ivy League championship. So. Must have been able to come together with those meetings with yourself and Wayne Young, who you mentioned. So glad that was able to work out. And, it shows a maturity for everybody involved to be able to sort of cast those things aside and move forward with the task at hand.
I think it was really the focus and the determination of the individuals and so forth. We'd come so far, I think folks were prepared to, to do the right thing. I'm not going to tell you that all the wounds were healed even after 50 years, but when I see some of those folks, but are we going to be successful? And so folks focus on the main thing in success.
Right. And that is the key. And just not to take away from your own experience here, but in my time here, one thing that really has tied white and black players on the football teams together is their experiences with Greek life. Was that something available or prominent in that era for the guys on the team? Was that something that was a unifying force?
Experience with what now?
I was mentioning that in my time here so far, something that really has united the white and black players has been their involvement with Greek life. It's been something that really has tied guys together. Would you say that was the case during your time as well, or was it more of a dividing factor? in Greek life, in the fraternities.
Greek life was not something that everybody was sort of into at that time. I think significantly, my roommates were not involved. I think it's a great activity and it helps. However, the number of individuals that I was associated with, did not move into, did not move into Greek life.
Absolutely, that certainly makes sense. Go ahead. Sorry.
Six. Americans. I would say not in already
one campus there was
less than 100. So they were busy and less interested in Greek life than they were working and moving in some other directions. So I think Greek life obviously began to broaden years later, and I think people took advantage of that. That certainly is a positive, getting to know people in other circumstances. So many other things going on to it.
Absolutely, which transitions. So I understand you were involved in the Afro-American Society throughout your 4 years here and actually served as an executive your senior year. Can you talk about that a little bit and sort of what the goals were at that time or the outcomes that you guys were looking for, and were you able to achieve them?
It's been so long. I don't recall that I was an officer in the organization. However, the one thing that I did contribute, I was always interested in connection with Black alumni. And so when I arrived on campus and going into like 1969 and 70, connecting with professional graduates of the school who were Black, and so trips to New York and did a couple of things. And if you look at the website of the Dartmouth Black Alumni, I think you'll see my name, co-founders of the organization. And so that had been a big connecting activity, I think it helped the students there. Became a good contact outlet as well as a resource, and today has blossomed into a great organization, which is contributing to the
Right. And just in terms of that, a lot and being able to reach out to alum who are a student, is that something that you, your professional career now on the other end, where students from the college would reach out to you and sort of seek your advice or counsel on what they could look for?
I did through the 1990s, as I got older, it sort of got a little bit
more distant. But I still have some connections today to members of that organization, as well as some of the fellow graduates as well. And it served as a connecting activity reunion this year.
Great. No, I'm very.
At least for 2 years, I was president of that organization.
Gotcha. Okay. And then just to quickly jump back to your time here, I know how busy things could be during the football season, but during the winter and the spring, how would you pass the time, the extra time that you did have? Were you going away on road trips, different places? Were there different activities on campus? What sorts of things were you spending your time doing?
It depended on the time period. I mean, there was one period in which I participated in a program, being graduates of the class of 1952. Had the opportunity to Berkeley. Alumni is and then during my senior year, participated in an off-campus worked in Atlanta. Part of that. Really, working in the dining hall, doing those things to try.
Yeah, wow, that's really cool. You had all those opportunities to spend time in different places in the world. You mentioned Berkeley and Atlanta and sort of represent Dartmouth during this time. And let me ask you, as you were in those places, and this continues even today as you travel, what is the impression that people have of Dartmouth, specifically of being an African-American at Dartmouth, and how do you answer that question or process what to be Black at this college?
During that time, I think the impression
is good now.
I think
it's an affirming,
presence, not only because we were one of the last classes that did not have women. So the college has taken on sort of a new appearance and a new flavor. That has helped with this recruiting. That has helped to broaden the scope and interest in the school, and I think has been a positive.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. I was meaning to ask about these.
There was just there was a lot of time lost in what to do about first the admission of women, and then second the Indian symbol. And to me at that time, they were no brainers in terms of, moving forward. But, again, a lot of time was lost, and I'm pleased to say that, we've now sort of matured, I think is a better word, and sort of quickly matured, quickly turned. I didn't get involved. I didn't need to get involved. But I was glad it was resolved as quickly as possible so that the school could continue its move forward.
Yeah, that's certainly something that I wanted to ask about. The vote to include women occurred in the fall of 1971, so during your senior year, right after you guys had won the Ivy League championship. So it was just a time of marked change, and you guys were sort of the era or the generation of change with, you know, not only the decision to admit women and the removal of the former mascot, but also on a national level. It was a time of major change and protests in our country. And can you just talk about that and some of the ways that the world around you affected your time here at Dartmouth?
Well, I don't know that it prevented people from working, and I don't know that it's involved in many or efforts. I simply supported those changes. And hope that Dartmouth could quickly get through it and move to the other side. Pleased that they did, and did so fairly expeditiously. Unfortunately, there's still some of those debates going on across the country. It's a problem, but I think we got through it, and I think college is better for it.
Yes, the college is certainly better for it. I would agree with you on that. And your time here, as we mentioned, you graduated in 1972 and then move on to Harvard Law School, which predates your sort of ascendance in the Maryland legal system. Can you just talk about your time at Harvard Law briefly, and then maybe prepared you for that experience? And
but I was accustomed, I think, to spending time, significant amount of time, in scholarship and study, and certainly law school is, is involved in that. I guess, for a sense of some of the, every person that you've had in your academic life that you thought was I don't want to say cutthroat, but you thought was razor sharp. With being your muscle section, and Harvard's classes were so large that the initial couple of months, it was difficult to develop relationships, after about 4 or 5 months, things began to settle in, and all law schools, not just Harvard, all law schools that first year, I think, are challenging. But I was fortunate. I had some great professors, got involved in a lot of things. It was my first time volunteering as a public defender, and I did that for several years. And I was fortunate in that there were several Dartmouth graduates who were already at ahead. Was there. And I'm forgetting some, but there were several Dartmouth folks who were there who also helped in the transition. And there were several who fought me in subsequent years. Ben Wilson, Dan Hall, a number of different people. So the challenging environment remained challenging. In decided to move. Worked with a law firm
two and a half years. I was interested in corporate law, which Harvard sort of focused me on.
Did a lot of banking work. In fact, the first vestiges of electronic banking. Electronic banking was starting back in 76, 75, 76. And so worked for some of the local banks, and MasterCard
actually
owned it for a while. But it got a little tough. How much printing should be on the back of a credit card? When the opportunity came for a U.S. senator who was on the banking committee, who was Paul, I jumped at the chance and I went to Washington for about 2 years enjoyed it, made a lot. Enjoyed the work. Was able to participate in a number of positive historical events. Assist a lot of different people, I viewed it as a great highlight. And typical of Washington is once you get there, you start looking around for your next job. Joining the Justice Department, the opportunity came to join the Justice Department and join its trial division. So I became a prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office, which was a great place to work, great people. Tried a number of different cases. Considered that part of my life to be a great success. One of my close friends, for district attorney, we call it state's attorney here, out of the U.S. Attorney's Office to basically become the chief deputy in his administration. The time went by very quickly. He turned around and after 3.5 years and ran for mayor. It was a great time. Had as state's attorney, I served 8.5 years, our office had about 125 attorneys and about 100 support staff at that time. The political juices started to flow, so I had an opportunity to perhaps be part of it. A cabinet position with him and left the prosecutor's office. And I took a position as head of the juvenile justice part of the government. Did that for 2 years. And then when the chief of the public safety and corrections retired, 5 years working with parole and probation and the penal system. Maryland at that time had about low, medium, and maximum across the state long before it became fashion. I was interested with a number of people in deinstitutionalization, particularly of old sick inmates, as well as the astounding number of African Americans who were caught up in sort of the drug wars, and what we could do to basically lower those numbers. And I had a great time and great interest in going around the country talking to people and networking with folks on how we could address that issue. And once I finished that, I had the opportunity to return to private practice with a law firm in Baltimore. One of the persons I met while I was practicing at the Justice Department had started a firm. It was not the kind of large practice I'd been in the beginning of my practice. And I went there and did criminal litigation, some consulting. And I enjoyed that. I did that for close to 17 years. Retired in 2020. Took a position with Maryland Legal Aid as chief counsel, where I remained until I retired.
Yeah, so sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just wanted, so you sort of were able to traverse
and go up.
That's probably not the right word, but climb and move to new opportunities. But let me just take you back for 1 second to your time in our nation's capital in D.C. 1978 to 82, you witnessed that you were there for some historical events and many positive historical events. Can you just briefly expand on those and what your involvement was during that time period?
Well, I think both on the committee, I think trying to invigorate some issues related to public housing, issues related to the appointments of African Americans to federal judicial positions. There are a lot of things I was able to do behind the scenes, as well as on behalf of Senator Sarbanes, and I think country. at least for me, in terms of both my career and on behalf of the half of the country. So, my Justice Department sort of straddled President Carter and President Reagan, so it was an interesting period in America's history at that time. It seems dull compared to, I guess, the last 10 years in terms of
right.
doing. But at least at that point, stimulating.
Yeah, absolutely, and that is something just to mark and have experienced, and now you carry through, and that experience builds upon itself, right? And I take the next step, and some of these things that you mentioned, being passionate about the decriminalization or deinstitutionalization, some of the older aides, maybe people who were sick or African Americans, and disproportionate numbers being incarcerated.
Really
are ahead of your time, not to make you sound old, because you're not, but these are issues that are continuing to be pressed today, and something that you were really, really an honor.
Well, I was pleased to be involved. I wasn't in my purpose. My purpose really was to try to make it better and to try to improve. I also made a reputation about trying to, at least organizationally, retune organizations in order to move in a particular direction. And so,
Mr. Sims, I've lost you for a second.
At least the camera went blank. I didn't touch anything on my end.
I'm just trying to do it. Help out the internet. I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Please go ahead. You were just beginning to talk about sort of some of your involvement in the issues that I had mentioned and what that meant to you.
Yeah, one of the things that had always been involved in, particularly insofar as criminal justice, was improving aspects of the criminal justice system in terms of outcomes and reducing recidivism rates. And so I took an approach to some extent that was different than some others. When I tried to
that was important to increase our reliance on and respect for criminal justice. Very difficult task, one which is very risky,
but one which I enjoyed. The other aspect was really trying to make organizations effective and programming effective. And so I enjoyed working with governmental entities and giving advice to people about governmental entities in order to make them effective as well. So all of that was sort of part of my
Yeah, absolutely. And, important things to commit yourself to. And just in researching a little bit for this interview, some of the honors that you've been given throughout your fantastic, and that could be the interview in and of itself, just asking about those. But, and I'm, it's hard to ask people about the awards they've been given, but it is certainly nice, I would assume, to be recognized. I would think as the best lawyers, general practice, criminal defense, and commercial litigation, best lawyers list. Super Lawyer by Super Lawyers Magazine. Some of the things that have been, granted your way. Is it nice to be recognized for some of your work?
Yeah, I think that aspect of private practice turned out well. I did. I was really thrilled about at private practice. The lawyers I was working with, the firm I was working for, and the projects that I worked on. Many were, and I still got two pro bono matters that I'm still sort of working on at the current time. So I enjoyed that. I was privileged to have a great run. I think in terms of the legal projects I was involved in and the people that I was involved with.
Absolutely, and that's remarkable that you're still at it. I didn't realize that was the case. Still taking on cases pro bono. And just as we sort of wrap up here, because I've taken up enough of your time today, we touched on this briefly before, but can you just talk about your current impressions of the college and how you see Dartmouth and how that fits into your life currently? I mean, how connected are you still, and what are your thoughts or impressions of the college?
Oh, the impressions are. And the impressions are positive. I see Dartmouth reaching out and continuing to reach out in a great many ways, and particularly over the last 5 years in terms of their electronically and through the clubs and keeping people engaged. I think it's it's certainly one of the positives that you know, breeds a level of interest, you know, and make the feel to some degree less remote than people say. And I'm, you know, by their presence in the life of so many individuals across the entire United States. I was engaged. Certainly, I had a term where I was on the alumni council, and I served for a period on the alumni council and enjoyed it. I've been on and off the Baltimore area, and to some extent the Washington Club of Dartmouth, and so benefited from, you know, being engaged with those organizations, and continue to sort of, when I can, try to take advantage of it, their programming and their involvement. I've also worked with efforts to reach out to current and former athletes.
Two individuals who visited me in Baltimore.
And we spent days together talking about the law, or talking about what they're going to do in terms of their graduate career. And so I've enjoyed those relationships as well.
Yeah, I'm sure those relationships are very rewarding. And your connection to the college overall as an alum, I would have to use the word rewarding. Thank you so much for taking the time. Is there anything else before I let you go that you would like to say just about the Oral History Project and Dartmouth Black Lives overall, and sort of as we build this thing, what your thoughts are, your stance?
Not really, but at least have a copy so I can tell my my kids or somebody.
Absolutely, yeah, we'll make this happen. I can send this over to you for sure. Thank you so much, Mr. Sims, for taking the time. I really can't say enough how much I appreciate it, despite the technical difficulties. Thank you for joining me, and I'll be sure to
Good luck to you. Always the next game, so, you know, next week.
That's right. It's our week to bounce back. Thanks again.
Okay.
Take it easy.
Thank
All
you.
Right, we'll be in touch.